shoulder. Well, when you put it that way. I wanted to reach out to him more than anything. I wanted to fold into him. I wanted to remind him that this was a war, that we could fight and run and stay together all we wanted, but we weren't always going to be able to keep each other safe. Jin. A demji and a budding diplomat, I see. The new voice sent pinpricks down my spine before I could answer. We'd been so wrapped up in our covert conversation that I hadn't noticed the Sultan approach. The Sultan placed a hand on my back. Needles climbed the length of my spine. I felt Jin's tension, and he turned it quickly into a bow. Prince Bao followed suit. And then he rose, and I watched Jin stand face to face with his father for the first time since he'd been a child in the harem. I knew exactly what he saw, because it was what I had seen. Ahmed, aged by another 2 decades. His brother, our prince, and our enemy becoming muddled into one. But I couldn't even begin to imagine what he felt, having to stand toe to toe with the man who had bought his mother and enslaved her in his harem, who had killed his brother's mother with his bare hands, who had taken me, and having to smile politely. "Don't lose your head," I willed silently under my breath. "Not now. Don't get us both killed." And then he bowed his head in front of his father, and keeping the smile fixed on his face, he made the introduction, presenting the Sichuan prince to the Sultan with a long string of titles as Prince Bao nodded along deliberately. "You speak Marajin very well," the Sultan said in compliment to Jin when he was done, barely sparing a glance at the foreign prince. I held my breath. The story spoke of Ahmed and Delilah disappearing into the night as if by magic, but the stories were only a sliver of the truth, twisted after passing across so many tongues. The Sultan was a smart man. I'd learned that much here. Surely he must have known how the two of them really escaped. He must have figured out that the Sichuan woman who disappeared the same night as his son and the demji baby had been responsible. Surely he remembered that while the stories had forgotten him, there had been another son who had vanished that night too. But if he did, none of it showed on his face, and nothing showed on Jin's. "Thank you," he said in his perfect Marajin. "Your Majesty does me a great honor." But the Sultan wasn't done with him yet. "Your mother was Marajin, perhaps?" "Don't lie. I'm standing right here. Don't lie. If he asks me, I can't lie for you."
"My father, Your Exalted Highness."
The Sultan nodded.
"If you will excuse me,"
he said to Jin, extending an arm for me.
"I need to steal Amani, if your prince doesn't mind, of course." I knew Jin well enough to see what the idea of letting me go did to him, that he'd rather square off against his father right here in the middle of the garden than let me walk away with our enemy, with the man who'd already taken me from him the first time. Jin inclined his head slightly. "Of course, Your Exalted Highness. I will make your apologies to Prince Bao."
The Sichuan prince's head bobbed along cheerfully, oblivious to the tension around him. And then the Sultan was clasping my arm in his, ignoring the gold dust from my arm rubbing off onto his sleeve, and I had no choice but to follow him away from Jin and not look back.
"You shouldn't be on your own," he said as he led me away. "There are a great many enemies of your kind here tonight. I had asked Rahim to watch you."
"He found an old friend of his from Ilyaz. It was as good as I could give him."
"He found more than that, by the looks of things."
He gave a pointed look
to where Lord Bilal, Rahim, and Shahzad were still deep in conversation. That he'd noticed that at all made me nervous as anything. He found a pretty face. My chest eased a little. So long as he didn't suspect Shahzad and Rahim of doing any more than flirting, then we didn't have to worry. Though I suspect that one could be a match for him in wits as well. I'd watched Shahzad get underestimated time and time again. Even Rahim had doubted her value tonight, in spite of my word. It frightened me that the Sultan had sized her up so easily. "Why am I here?" I asked, trying to draw his attention away from my wayward guardian and my friend. "If it's so dangerous." "Because." The Sultan stopped walking. We'd come to an alcove in a wall of the garden, shielded from the crowd. "You asked me why we must renew our alliances with foreign powers who place their own countries over Miraji. I want you to have the answer to that question, Amani."
He released my arm.
"Stay here." The order didn't come with the old pull, but the Sultan didn't know that. As far as he knew, I'd grow roots. The Sultan stepped up onto the raised platform in the garden. The tension that had been rising in my chest since dawn was nearly bursting me. Night was falling around us, and nobody had lit any lamps around the garden to ward against it. The only light came from the lamps strung above the platform, plunging the crowd into darkness. It was almost too perfect a cover to slip out under.
"Esteemed guests, welcome. I am honored by your presence."
The Sultan called through the gardens, summoning all attention onto him. Conversations went out like snuffed matches all around us, as clusters of people turned into a crowd around the raised platform. I started to push my way through against the bodies pushing towards the platform. I was headed towards the edge of the garden. To rejoin the rebellion and get the hell out of here. Assuming I didn't wind up burned alive like Akeem's wife for releasing the gene. The Sultan's voice carried on from the stage. He was talking about peace and about power, meaningless platitudes. Around me, snatches of translation drifted out of the crowd. Shahzad appeared next to me as I dodged around a Mirajin woman who rattled with rubies. Neither of us spoke or broke our pace as we came together, like two currents merging into a river. As we got further, Sam dropped into place between us, splitting off from the other soldiers in the same uniform as him, but with different loyalties. We broke free of the crowd, finally. Sam pulled ahead of us as we approached the wall, and he grabbed our hands, the gold dust from my palm staining his, as we pressed between two of the clay and bronze sculptures.
"Hold your breath," he instructed, as I fought my instinct to flinch away from walking straight into a wall.
We should have met hard stone. Instead, it was like stepping into sand. Like the wall had changed its form for us, from solid to soft. Only it was reluctant to. Even as we pushed through, I felt it trying to trap us there. The stone was pressing against my skin, fighting back to the shape it had been for thousands of years. I squeezed my eyes shut. After surviving the harem and the Sultan, I was going to die here anyway. I was going to be entombed in the walls of the palace forever. And then the air hit my skin again, and I was through, stumbling out the other side, away from the Aurangzeb celebrations, into the quiet of the polished palace halls.
"Took you long enough."
Hala greeted us on the other side. She looked like herself, golden skin and all, dressed in simple desert clothes as she waited. Sam had gotten her in a few hours before. Waiting seemed to have put her in an even better mood than she was usually in. Her eyes swept me. "That color doesn't suit you,"
Yes, I've already been over this with Emin. Thank you for your input. I decided to ignore Hala, turning to Shazad instead. You knew Jin was back and nobody thought to mention it to me? She paused, unwrapping the sash around her waist, revealing rolls and rolls of gunpowder hidden inside. Sam and Shazad traded a sort of conspiratorial look, the kind Shazad and I used to share. I was reminded with a pang of how long I'd been gone. Don't lie to me, Shazad. Of all people, don't you lie to me. Yes, he got back yesterday, Shazad admitted. Iz found him. When we went down to Dustwalk after your tip about the factory, he was looking for you down there. He seemed to think you might have changed your mind and headed home with that aunt of yours, idiot. For what it's worth, Sam piped up, I did vote to tell you. For what it's worth, Shazad said, you're a thief, not a rebel, so you don't get a vote. I really don't think you've got the moral high ground here, Sam returned, leaning against the wall, looking all too pleased with himself. He was enjoying Shazad's attention, whatever form it came in. And another thing, Hala groaned, cutting him off. While someone might be fascinated by this, they are not people currently trying to get you across a palace unseen. Do you mind? I led the way. We stayed close to Hala, moving as slowly as we could. It made it easier for her to fool the minds of the soldiers we passed standing guard inside the palace. They were few and far between. Resources were spread thin tonight. But not a single one of them blinked as we walked straight in front of them. Their minds were twisted firmly by Hala's power, so all they saw was empty hallway. We moved quietly down now familiar hallways and around corners until finally we came face to face with Princess Hawa's mosaic. Sam didn't wait for me to speak, grabbing our hands again, pulling us through the wall. We came out, half stumbling, at the top of the old stone stairs that I'd walked down the first time I'd woken in the palace, the Sultan holding a lamp in front of us, so I could see only one step in front of me at a time. Only I could see the bottom of the steps now. We weren't alone in the palace vaults. My arm shot out, stopping Shazad from going any further. She understood the signal instantly, pausing where she was. We moved carefully, lowering ourselves on the stairs like ghouls in the night, crouching until we were at the edge of the shadows, until we could see clearly into the crypt. The vaults flickered with the movement of the captured Jean. There were 18 of them now. 18 names that I had called one by one to be trapped. And though they'd all taken the form of men, there was still something unnatural about them. They stood like pillars of immortal power around the vaults, sometimes catching light that couldn't come from anywhere. The sheer force of their presence felt like a physical blow. A half dozen men in uniform carrying torches were huddled around Farish Day. He was exactly where I had left him after calling him, trapped inside the iron circle. Only somebody had placed what looked like a cage over him. It was made of brass and iron and gold and glass, all interlocking in complicated patterns, jointed in a thousand places, arches of metal curving into each other. The other captured Jean looked on curiously from within their own circles, like parents watching something their child had made and they didn't wholly understand. For a fraction of a second, Bahadur's eyes darted up our way before going back to the other immortals. Something shifted in the circle of soldiers, and the figure who had been working at the machine came into view. I knew Layla instantly, even from this far away. So this was why I hadn't been able to find her in the gardens. She was moving anxiously, hands dancing across complicated-looking pieces of machinery as easily as they ever did with the little toys she made in the harem. She twisted something, stepping back suddenly. The whole circle of soldiers took a step back with her. For two heartbeats, nothing happened. And then the machine came alive. The bars of the cage started to move, slowly at first, then faster. Inside the machine, Farishte watched curiously as the blades moved. He didn't look afraid, but panic was starting to rise in my chest. The machine whirred faster and faster, huge blades swinging in evenly paced circles, like each one was a moving horizon across a huge globe. The bronze blades rising like dawn, the dark iron blades cutting across bringing the sunset, faster and faster, until it was a blur of machine around the genie. A sense of dread filled my chest. We had to free him. We had to free him now, before it was too late. I started to move forward, blind to the danger. And then one of the pieces of the machine, an iron blade, snapped into place. It swung suddenly, arching upwards towards the sky. It froze there for a moment. I saw what was going to happen a second before it did. It drove straight through Farishte's chest. Inside, the immortal genie, one of God's first beings, who was made at the same time as the world, who had seen the birth of humanity, who had watched the first immortals fall and seen the first stars born, who had faced the destroyer of worlds, died. Chapter 37. The Jean were made from a fire that never went out, an ever-burning smokeless fire that came from God. And in the early days of the world, the first beings lived in an endless day. Then the destroyer of worlds came, and with her she brought the darkness, she brought night, and she brought fear. And then she brought death. Wielding iron, she killed the first immortal genie, and when he died, he burst into a star. One after another, the genie fell that way, filling our sky. Watching Farishte die was like beholding a star on Earth. White burned across my eyes, and I was blinded. I heard someone scream. I heard Shazad shout something I couldn't make out. Slowly, the light retreated from under my eyelids, leaving me blinking but able to see again. Inside the machine, Farishte's body was gone. What was left was burning bright as a star, and the metal of the machine around him was blazing incandescent. I felt the hairs on the back of my neck stand up painfully. I knew where I'd felt this before. The metal door, before the Gallon tried to kill me. Even as we watched, the light whipped up a wire I hadn't seen before, igniting, racing along the ceiling, darting above us. There was a shout from below as the flash of light above our heads illuminated us too sharply to miss. The time for subterfuge was over. Sam grabbed us both by the hand, wrenching us up the steps and back through the door so fast I barely had time to take a breath before we plunged through. Paula staggered back as we stumbled through. Paula. I tore my hand out of Sam's for a moment. He stumbled to a stop, but Shazad didn't. She was a few paces ahead of us, already running back towards the garden. Layla, she's down there. Get her out. She didn't even argue with me. I didn't give her time. I was running, chasing on Shazad's heels back towards the gardens. I glanced over my shoulder before we rounded a corner, just in time to see the door in the mosaic open. Unsuspecting soldiers spilling out towards a waiting Hala, who grabbed hold of their minds before they'd taken a step. And then Shazad wrenched me around the corner. Hala and Layla were on their own. Sam grabbed hold of me as we approached the wall, dragging me towards it. We burst through the wall, gasping, just as the Sultan's speech ended. Applause burst around us, and for a moment I felt destabilized, plunging away from what we'd just seen, chasing the starlight, back to the normality of the palace. And then, all around the darkened garden, lights started to come on. Not oil light, not fire and flickering torchlight, just light. Fire without heat. And it was coursing out from the machine that had just killed the genie, and then getting trapped in the crystal birds that I'd seen earlier, hanging from strings and staying there, flaring to life. Bottled starlight. Odd sounds filled the gardens as the lights illuminated the amazed faces of the Aurangzeb guests. And then, in the corner of the garden, something moved. I snapped around in time to see one of the statues shift. One of the figures of the Sultan's dead brothers straightened his head, and then the one next to him, and the one next to him. The metal men straightened up and took a step, and another. The crowd started to turn around, expecting another party trick, but this wasn't a trick. "What are they doing?" I heard the fear in Shahzad's voice. It was rare to hear her afraid, but I knew she was remembering the same thing I was. A train. A boy in a metal suit. Burning hands. Bahi's screams. A foreign man in the crowd was forced to stagger back as a statue advanced on him. I was sitting across from the Sultan in his study when he spoke about the servants of clay the genie made before humanity. The Abdals, creatures of clay who obeyed any order. I was listening when he talked about the first time he had made a mistake, thinking he could control a Demji, that our power wasn't worth the risk of disobedience. It didn't mean he'd given up on having that power. It meant he'd given up on disobedience. The metal things were stepping past the Mirajin towards the foreign guests, penning them in. I heard the Sultan telling me Mirajin forces alone couldn't stand against the threats on our borders. It was a trap. Aurangzeb, the ceasefire, everything. It was a trap to lure them here. I knew what was going to happen the second before it did. One of the Albish soldiers lunged between the metal man and his queen. The statue raised one hand. I was watching his face when he burned. He burned like Bahi had burned in Norsham's hands. He burned like something lit with genie fire. Chapter 38. The scream started, some of them snuffing out before they could start, as the Abdals turned their stolen genie magic on them. Mirajin soldiers were pouring into the gardens now, too, cutting off anyone who tried to run. The smell of blood mingled with the smell of burning. I realized that I was waiting for an order from Shahzad that hadn't come yet, that she was frozen next to me. Pressed against the wall, watching men and women burn, the same way she'd watched Bahi burn. If she wasn't going to take charge, someone else would have to. My eyes darted around the garden for Jin. I couldn't see him. "Sam," I ordered, "you need to start getting people out from our side, as many as you can, and then you get out. Shahzad?" She jolted as I grabbed her arm. I did my best imitation of her. We needed someone to be Shahzad, and she wasn't herself just now. "I need you to pull yourself together." She was pale, but she nodded. "How do you feel about using that gunpowder to blow the gates?" The gates were on the other side of the garden, chaos and death blooming in between us. I saw her mind working. The Abdals were attacking only the foreigners. They wouldn't cause her any trouble, seeing as she was Mirajin. But there were too many soldiers. There was no crossing that. "I need a weapon." Shahzad said, finally sounding close to normal. She was wrapping a shima around her face, hiding her identity.
I might be able to help with that.
Rahim appeared by my elbow. There was already blood on his uniform. He held out a foreign-looking sword to Shahzad.
Are you as good as Amani says you are?
No, I'm even better. Shahzad grabbed the blade out of his hand. Together? The Sultan had been right. They were a well-matched pair. They burst into movement as easily as if they had been trained as one person their whole lives. Soldiers' bodies fell around them as they moved, fighting their way across the chaos. At the same time, Sam turned, plunging into the crowd, discarding his albish uniform jacket as he went. Tamid. He darted across my mind all of a sudden. Paula was supposed to get him out, but the plan had changed. She was getting Layla now. I had to get him. I couldn't leave him behind again. I was running before the thought had even finished, dodging around the chaos in the garden. I plunged into the hallways, headed for Tamid's rooms, the noise from the garden fading into the distance. The sound of clattering feet in pursuit replaced it. I glanced over my shoulder as I ran. My escape from the gardens hadn't gone unnoticed. A handful of soldiers were behind me. A gunshot sounded just as I flung myself around a corner. The bullet hit where my head would have been. Plaster sprayed like blood, peppering my skin. Orders must not be to capture me then. I careened around the next corner, my bare feet skidding on smooth marble. And then, like a genie blossoming from the sand, Jin was there at the other end of the hallway, firing at something I couldn't see. My heart took off, and I felt myself speed up. He turned, gun up, raised toward me as I bolted down the hall. The soldiers were close behind me, but he wouldn't have a clear shot at them, not with me in the way. I pumped my legs harder. I had to get to him before they got a shot off at me. I could almost hear the hammers pulling back on the guards' rifles. I crashed into Jin full speed. His arm curled around me. He turned me sharply as the guards lined up their shots until there was nothing but his body between me and the bullets. I could feel the pistol pressing into my back. I curled one hand around it, and Jin's grip yielded. It was like being home. I aimed in the space around Jin's body that was still shielding me. Three quick shots, and then there weren't any more. Not from me. Not from them. Because I didn't miss. I pulled away from Jin. There were three bodies slumped on the ground, dead, and then there was nothing but Jin filling my vision. You're bleeding. Jin's hands were frantically searching my body. I was shaking hard. The sensation of being back in his hands, of us being together again, of pure relief. Not mine, I shook my head. I had no idea where the blood had come from. We have to move. We need to get people out. We are. Jin grabbed my hand. They're getting as many people out as possible. Shahzad is taking care of the gates, and Amin escaped with your friend Tamid in the confusion. We need to... We burst around a corner. Kadir stood in our way, flanked by two of the Abdals. Their twisted bronze faces staring at us blankly. Like Norsham, but without any eyes, without any flesh or blood inside, or any doubt. This was what the Sultan had wanted. Soldiers who couldn't turn traitor. Demji who didn't have a conscience, who wouldn't fight his control. I fired on instinct. My last bullet. It plunged straight through the clay where its heart should have been. It didn't even stagger. Well, little Demji bitch. Kadir raised his gun towards us. No traitor brother of mine around to save you now. Want to bet? Jin stepped in front of me, shielding me from Kadir, ready to fight him. But Kadir wasn't interested in a fair fight. His finger was already pressing down on the trigger. That was when the gates exploded. The Sultim staggered, his shot going wide. It was enough. I grabbed Jin's hand. We bolted for the stairs, a spiral leading up and up and up. Our feet pounded against stone as we climbed, Kadir close behind. We burst out onto a hallway, and I realized suddenly that I knew where we were. I spun towards the room at the end of the hallway. It was Tamid's workroom, the one where I'd been able to see the roofs of Miraji when I thought about jumping. I slammed the door behind us, shoving the bolt into place a second before Kadir crashed into it, making the wood shake. In the corner of the room, one of the glass bottles fell from the shelf and shattered across the ground. There, a coil of rope among the bottles and the bandages. I grabbed it with one hand and ran to the balcony, Jin close on my heels. It was a narrow jump between the edge of the balcony and the wall, and from there, it'd be an easy climb down. I think we can make that. I was breathing hard. I was trying to be sure. I thought it was about the same distance as it was between Tamid's roof and the one next to it at his house back in Dustwalk. I'd made that jump before. But that was so long ago, it was hard to remember. And the drop here was a whole lot farther. I wish I shared your confidence, Bandit. Jin's breathing suddenly sounded shallow. I looked over and saw him clutching his side. I grabbed his hand and pulled it away. It was a long cut. A stray bullet, maybe. Damn it! I looked around desperately. Kadir was hammering on the door behind us. We were trapped. No way back. Only forward. If I can make it. I tied the rope to the banister of the balcony. Can you crawl? That smile pulled at the edge of Jin's mouth. Have I told you that you're exceptional lately? No. I looped the rope around the edge of the balcony again. You disappeared on me for a few months without explanation instead. Jin spun me around to face him. You. He kissed me quickly on the left corner of my mouth, sending a rush through me. R. The right corner of my mouth this time. Exceptional. I didn't wait for it. I pulled him to me, kissing him fiercely before pushing him away. We don't really have time for this now. I know. I'm distracting you. He tugged on the piece of rope and the loop I'd made came untied. As exceptional as you may be, you're also exceptionally bad at knots. He started doing something complicated, his fingers working deftly. And then he turned to me. In a few quick motions, he'd looped the other end of the rope around my middle. If you're going to risk your life, might as well do it safely. You're sure that will hold? I looked at the tangle around the railing uncertainly. You can trust a sailor with knots, Jin said. And you can trust me with you. He steadied me with one hand as I climbed up. No matter how far down the drop looked from the balcony, it looked a lot worse standing on the balcony's railing. The jump might not be all that far, but it was a long way to fall and a narrow landing. I could probably make that. The door rattled behind us, Kadir pounding his way in. I was half sure I could make that. I took a deep breath. I was about to find out. I jumped. Open air yawned below me. For a second, I wondered if this was how Iz and Maz felt when they shifted into animals, when they flew. My bare feet hit the wall, stumbling. I grabbed on to one of the crenellations for balance. I teetered there for a second before I found my footing. I pulled the knot around my middle and wrapped it around the crenellation. The rest of the rope hung down the other side of the wall, almost to the bottom, at least close enough to get us out of the palace. It looked solid enough, and God, it had better be. On the other side of the balcony, Jin swung himself over the edge. He locked his hands and legs around the rope. The knot next to me tugged as Jin leaned his weight onto the rope. It held. And still held as Jin tugged his way across, one inch at a time, leaving a trail of blood behind. All I could do from the wall was watch, heart in my throat, as every tug brought him closer to me. He was nearly halfway across when the lock to the door broke. Kadir burst through in a storm of rage. I had my gun up and pointed before he had made it to the balcony. I didn't have any bullets, just a bluff. "Touch that rope, and I can make you sorry that you were ever born, Kadir." "You're lying." But he couldn't come any closer, rooted, chest heaving with rage. "I'm a Demji." I pulled the hammer back on the empty gun. "I can't lie." Neither of us moved. We were in a standoff now. I stood on the wall, gun up, pointing it straight at Kadir as Jin dragged himself the rest of the way across the rope, one inch at a time, slowly, slowly. He didn't have to be fast. He just had to be faster than Kadir's brain worked, faster than the Sultim would take to realize I had nothing but an empty gun. "Kadir." The voice at the door made me jump so hard that I had to steady myself on the wall. The Sultan was alone, stepping through the door. There were no guards with him, no Abdals. "Father," Kadir held out one hand. "Careful, she has a gun." His gaze darted from me to Kadir, to the gun, back to Kadir. His mind wouldn't work nearly so slow as his eldest son's. I urged Jin silently to hurry. He was a hand breath away now. The Sultan dropped a hand on his firstborn's shoulder. "Oh, my son, you are a fool." Then the Sultan pulled out a knife. I started to shout, started an empty threat that I couldn't finish with no bullets left in the gun. A promise to stay in the palace if he let Jin leave. Anything that might buy Jin the last few moments he needed to get across before the Sultan cut through the rope and killed him. He didn't slash towards the rope. Instead, the blade in his hand went straight through Kadir's throat. It was a clean kill, like with a hunting prize. So clean that when Kadir dropped to the ground, the annoyed protest was still written all over his face. So fast that I didn't have time to cry out before he was on the ground. The shock rippled through me, freezing my tongue, my whole body. The Sultan looked up at me calmly, wiping his firstborn's blood onto the dead prince's shirt. And suddenly I was sitting across the table from him again, listening to him tell me that his sons would drive this country into dust under foreign heels, that Kadir wasn't any more fit to rule than Ahmed. "There is nothing I wouldn't do for this country, Amani." The Sultan turned to face me. He wasn't stupid. He was going to figure out I was out of bullets pretty fast. I had to keep him busy just a few moments until Jin made it across. "You know, it's been a while since I went to prayers." There was a weight crushing my chest as I spoke. I had hated Kadir, but God, seeing him like that, with his eyes staring glassily up at the night sky, blood still gushing from his throat. "But I'm pretty sure God frowns on killing your own son."
"Ah, yes."
The Sultan smiled placatingly. Cursed is the one who kills his own blood. Remember what we are celebrating, Amani. My ascent to this throne. I think I am past being able to escape that curse. Besides, Kadir would not have made a good ruler. It's my own fault, really. He was born too early in my reign. I was scarcely older than he is. Was. He spared a glance down at the body bleeding out on the balcony. I'd planned that the throne would pass him by, go straight to my grandchild, but of course that wasn't to be. I hadn't counted on that power-hungry little wife of Kadir's to be so resourceful.
Shira. She had been dead a few days, and already her name was being erased. When they told the stories of what happened in this war, was that all she would be? The power-hungry Saltima? He looked back at me.
And I have to admit, I had not anticipated you managing to get yourself free.
He almost looked impressed.
How did you do it?
You've overestimated the loyalty of your own people.
I wasn't going to give him Tamid's name.
Do you really think this is going to save them? Make them rally to you again? Slaughtering anyone who stands in your way?
It's not about the dead foreigners downstairs, Amani. It's about all the ones left alive overseas.
The Sultan looked at me over the barrel of the gun.
Do you know what happens in a country when the throne changes hands, Amani? Turmoil. Civil war. Too much war for them to turn their minds to invading us again anytime soon. And by the time they do, I will have an army of Abdals ready to defend our borders.
An army of clay men with Demji powers. Put that at our borders, and he was right. We'd never be invaded again.
The Demji before you.
He meant Norsham.
He never used his name, like he never had mine until the day I'd killed that duck, like we were things to him. He burned so bright. But I lost the protection he would have given this country.
Because I set him free.
I wondered if I could recreate his fire, if I could create a bomb out of metal with the power of a genie, and instead I found the right fire to create life, because that's what the genie fire is. It's life. It's energy. It gave us life, and I have just harnessed it. Not to destroy, to power this country. The Galen claim the time of magic is over and turn to machinery. The Albish cling to their old ways. We will be among the countries that unite the two.
All at the cost of slaughtering our immortals.
The first beings made us to fight their wars. But where have they been in our wars? While our borders are harried by foreigners with their greater numbers. While my people make it easier for them by turning against each other at the urging of my son.
He spoke patiently, like he might do for his own children, explaining a difficult lesson. Only he wasn't my father. My father was a genie. My father was a genie trapped inside the palace at his mercy. And for the first time since the Destroyer of Worlds was defeated, at very real risk of dying.
My father hadn't cared when I had been about to die. Why should I care about him?
But I did.
The time of the immortal things is long over. We have taken this world from them. There is a reason that Demji like you are rarities now. This world belongs to us. And this country belongs to us. It is the role of children to replace their parents. We are the Jean's children.
The Sultan smiled a slow, lazy smile.
And I think you're out of bullets.
And then Jin was across. He grabbed the edge of the wall and pulled himself up with a grunt of pain, and then his arms were around my waist. He half leapt,
half dropped, his hand looping around the rope as he went. And we were falling on the other side of the palace walls, and I was free. Chapter 39. Isman was blazing still with Aurangzeb's celebrations, even in the ruins of the blessed Saltima's uprising. News hadn't reached the city yet of what was going on in the palace, that we were free of foreign rule, that the Sultim was dead. I trusted Jin to lead us through the unfamiliar streets. The journey was painstakingly slow as we laced our way under the shadows of windows, spilling out light and noise, through the winding side alleys of the unfamiliar city, avoiding the big streets flooded with drunks and celebrations. Here. Jin pulled me to a stop, finally, by a small door in a white stucco wall in an alley so narrow the wall before us almost touched the one behind us. A gutter ran from the door through the narrow paved streets. I wasn't sure what I was expecting on the other side. For it to lead to another world, maybe, like our old door? Or that it would spill down into a secret passage that would lead to wherever the rest of the rebellion had set up since we'd lost the Dev's Valley? Instead, we stepped into a large kitchen, warmly lit by the embers of a dying fire. It was about the most normal kitchen I'd ever been in, just like my aunt's back in Dustwalk. Except this one didn't seem to be in low supply of food. Gleaming pots and pans hung from the ceiling between drying herbs and spices. Tinned supplies lined the shelves. I slammed the door shut on the night behind us. I didn't have time to consider where we were, except safe. Jin and I collapsed next to the fireplace, his back against the wall. I was on my knees, facing him. "You're covered in blood." I eased him down off my shoulder. "I need to see." "I'm fine." But he let me tug the hem of his shirt over his head all the same, wincing as his arms went up over his head. His blood-stained shirt hit the floor in a ball, even as he rested his arms on top of his head, stretching his chest out and giving me unhindered access. He wasn't lying to me, at least. The better part of the blood didn't seem to be his. Some stained his skin, but aside from the wound in his side that had kept him from jumping to the wall and a huge bruise blooming like a cloud under the tattoo of the bird over his ribs, he didn't seem too badly hurt. I noticed it then. A bright red cloth wrapped around the top of his left arm like an armband. I might have thought it was a bandage, but I'd know my Shima anywhere. I reached out without thinking, fingers skimming the edge of where the fabric met his skin. His eyes snapped open at the touch, and he looked down like he'd forgotten he was wearing it. "This is yours." His fingers started to fumble with the knot on the inside of his arm. I sat back on my heels. I thought I'd lost it. It was stupid. It was nothing but a piece of cloth. It wasn't the rebellion. It wasn't Jin. It was just a thing. A thing I didn't think I'd ever get back. "I thought you'd left it." He didn't look at me. He was still fiddling with the knot. It was fastened tightly, like he'd been desperate not to lose it. "Left it?" Finally, the knot came apart in his fingers. "The morning after you vanished." His shoulders were taut as he unwound the red Shima from his arm. "You were gone, and this was outside my tent." I must have lost it in the scuffle with Sophia, when I'd been standing outside his tent, deciding whether to go in. "It seemed like a message." The skin under where it had been tied was paler, like it hadn't seen the sun in a while. He handed me the Shima. I took one end. Our history hung between us, A dozen tiny reminders of the first days we'd known each other, when things had been simpler. He'd been the Eastern Snake, and I'd been the Blue-Eyed Bandit. And it had been just the two of us, not the two of us and a whole revolution, a whole country. I started to say something about how stupid it was to think I'd leave and tell him with a discarded Shima. But then we hadn't been all that good at telling each other things. You left first. I pulled at the edge of the Shima. When I was hurt, you left me. You walked into the path of a bullet, Amani. He smoothed back a piece of hair from my face gently, his fingers running down it to where it ended bluntly from the wound inflicted by Ayet's scissors. He looked at me like he was relearning my face. I didn't need to memorize him again. He looked exactly the same as when I'd left him. Did I look different from my time in the harem? You walked into it without a care for your own life. That's what I do, I said. That's what you do, too. I know. Jin's hands fell away from my hair, settling on my shoulders instead, lacing at the nape of my neck. But that doesn't mean I had to like it. You were mad at me for almost dying? I was so close to him that all I had to do was breathe for us to be touching. I felt like he was holding me together between his hands, but the heat of them made me feel like I might vibrate out of my skin. At you, at Ahmed, at myself, at everyone. He was finally looking at me square on. The dying embers cast his face in a warm glow as his thumb ran circles over the back of my neck. I'm not good at losing people, Amani, and you know I don't give a damn about this country. The rest of him was still now, something solid to hang on to. But his fingers were sliding into my hair, making me shiver. Not the way Ahmed does, and not the way Shazad does. I came here because I give a damn about him, and I give a damn about Delilah, and they both love this place. I give a damn about you, and you are this place. I thought I had to do without you, if you were so determined to leave the world. But then you were gone, and I would have torn the desert apart looking for you. I wanted to say something that would help. I wanted to say that he didn't have to be scared of me dying, but that would be a lie. We were in a war. No lives were safe. I couldn't promise him a future where I didn't take another bullet, and he couldn't promise me one either. The same reckless hope that had us fighting it all was as likely to kill us. So I didn't say anything as I closed the last of the distance between us. He said he would have torn the desert apart looking for me. And I felt in that kiss his desperation as his mouth found mine. It wasn't enough with Jin. It was never enough. His hands were in the mess of my torn palace clothes, trying to find me under the too heavy stitching and the weight of the gaudy kalat. One hand tangled into my hair, pulling away the delicate gold circlet that still clung there. He freed it from my hair, casting it aside, pulling pieces of the palace away from me, trying to return me to him. It was like being caught in a wildfire, desperate for breath. Like if we stopped, we would extinguish. Without thinking, I pulled my hands away from his chest. It took one quick movement for my torn culotte to come off and join his shirt in the heap on the ground until I was wearing nothing but the thin linen chemise underneath. His fingers found the hem, pushing it up, and then they were against my stomach, grazing the scar on my hip. I suddenly realized I was shaking. I pressed against him, skin to skin, looking for some kind of warmth. His hands found the small of my back, stilling me against him. I felt us slow, my heartbeat slow. The wildfire turned to embers as Jin held me flush against him. I realized how close we were to the edge of doing something more. His skin against mine, his hands climbing my body, sinking me into him. The door to the kitchen clattered open, wrenching us violently apart. Sam stumbled into the kitchen, carrying an unconscious Layla. What happened? I was on my feet in a second. Jin was easing himself up the wall carefully behind me.
She made the crucial error of resisting.
Kala followed through the door, dropping the illusion of looking human as she did, her skin going back to its normal golden hue. She was fighting us, saying she couldn't leave her brother behind. Turns out she could. She took my still glittering skin in with one sweeping glance, though half the gold dust had faded in the escape.
Well, this is a sorry sight, she said by way of greeting.
Her eyes danced to Jin. Some of the dust from my skin had rubbed off on Jin, a smear of gold from his left ear to his mouth. Jin wiped a hand absent-mindedly across his jaw. It was no good. The gold from my skin was all over his hands, too. I might have been embarrassed if it wasn't for the unconscious princesses and old friends in this tiny kitchen pulling my mind in other directions.
The others? Jin asked, giving up.
His question was answered before Hala could. Emin stumbled in, servant's garb badly torn. Shazad pushed her way into the kitchen behind Emin. She had Tamid by the arm. He tried to shake her off angrily as she pushed him ahead of her. Shazad let him go slowly, making it clear she didn't have to before she did. And then she saw me, and that sloppy smile broke over her face as she closed the distance with a hug. I felt my own arms, like they were finally untethered, fling themselves around her.
Rahim?
I asked.
Alive, she released me. Captured. He's a soldier through and through. We needed someone to cover our escape, and he wouldn't run.
She looked at me.
We're going to fix this.
And I believed her, because I was back. I wasn't a prisoner anymore, and we could do anything. Her hand tightened on my back, and then Emin was demanding her attention, and she split away from me. And I was facing Tamid, who was staring at the ground intently, leaning wrong on his fake leg. And then my arms were around him. Relief racked through my body.
Thank you.
I pulled him close. But to me, didn't return the gesture. He pulled away.
I'm not a traitor, Amani. I didn't do it.
His eyes went to Jin.
For your rebellion.
The only time Tamid had met Jin, he'd been pulling me up onto a buraki while I left Tamid bleeding in the sand. My guess was that wouldn't particularly endear him to my childhood friend.
Well then,
Shazad clapped a hand on his shoulder as I swallowed the lump in my throat.
I guess we'll be keeping both you and the princess under lock and key for a while. Come on.
Where are we?
I asked finally, glad my voice sounded normal as we started towards the door leading out of the kitchen and into the house.
My house, Shazad said.
I tripped on the bottom step of the kitchen. Jin steadied me.
My father is away, and I sent my mother and my brother to our house on the coast. I didn't want to put them in danger.
We're camping out in General Hamad's house? I asked.
No.
Jin's hand was at the base of my back.
That would be like asking to get caught. We are using it, but most of the camp...
He winced as he reached for the door, grasping his side. I opened it for him. A fine dining room, dark now, waited on the other side.
There's a garden not far from here,
Jin explained as we crossed slowly.
It's linked to this house by a tunnel.
Jin led me through another door, his hand looping tighter on my waist. I realized he'd scarcely let me go since